All right, Jen Cooper, the Keeper here with the next episode of the Mix Zone Women's Soccer Podcast. This is podcast number 92. So I want to give a shout out to former U.S. Women's National Team midfielder, forward Angela Hughleys. She was the 92nd overall pick in the general WSA draft back in December 2000. Angela was selected by the Boston Breakers, played for them in both the WSA and the WPS. 18 months after being drafted by the Breakers, Hughleys earned her first cap for the national team and was a member of two Women's World Cup squads and two Olympic teams that won gold. And she retired from the national team in 2009 with 109 caps and 13 goals. So if you follow Keeper Notes on Twitter, you probably saw the USA jersey rant that I posted to keepernotes.com Monday. If you haven't read it yet, please stop the podcast, go to the website, read it real quick. And after reading it, if you have any feedback that you'd like to share with me or with Nike, please let me know. I actually have a contact at Nike who wants feedback from WOSA fans of all types. And I also want to add a few notes to go along with what I wrote in the article. So Nike Soccer tweeted Monday afternoon that a USA jersey with a higher neckline will be coming out at a later date. I believe them, but my concern is that this jersey is likely the authentic cut that the players wear, which means it's cut even narrower than normal women's sizes jerseys. And my second concern, it's priced at $165 before customization, tax, and shipping. The same authentic jersey for any Adidas national team would cost $120. Just saying. Maybe they're creating a separate replica version, as you call it, of the $90 jersey with a higher neckline. I doubt it. They're such a large company, it's hard to kind of create that production really quickly, but we'll just have to wait and see. Also, I know a lot of people are angry, like I'm angry, but please don't boycott Nike because you're unhappy about the jerseys. That would actually hurt the small businesses that carry the jerseys and not Nike. At this point, soccer stores like my own have already paid for the U.S. jerseys that are in stock, and these can't be sent back to Nike. So in Nike's mind, these have already sold. I would maybe, if you feel the need to boycott, don't buy stuff from Nike.com. Maybe don't buy stuff from USsoccer.com, but always support your local retailer. They've already paid for that stuff. They can't send it back. Instead of boycotting, tell Nike and U.S. Soccer how you feel via Twitter, Facebook, even the live chat on Nike.com and USsoccer.com store. And also, I am going to be putting up an online petition on keepernotes.com so we can gather more specific feedback from fans that I can then pass on directly to my contact at Nike. And also, when you're shopping in a soccer store or even a general sporting goods store, ask for the merchandise you want. Go up in any store and say, why don't you have something from the NWSL? They might not know what you're talking about, but this is how you spread the word. Don't automatically assume that it's merchandise that they chose not to carry. More often than not, vendors never approach these stores to say, hey, do you want to carry this merchandise? And I think that's where the bigger problem is. Same goes for NWSL merchandise. Make your wants and needs known to your club, to the league, to NWSLshop.com, to Nike, any sports retailer. They don't know. The league is still young and small. They don't know that this merch is out there. If you keep asking, it kind of sends a message. And please, don't ever hesitate to reach out to me about merchandise that you want for U.S. national team or Canada national team or, of course, NWSL clubs. If I can make it happen, I will. Email me anytime, jen@soccerforall.com. All right, so the actual topic for this podcast, continuing with the NWSL preview theme, had a long chat with my WOSA buddy, Evan Davis, who's covered the Seattle Reign a lot in the last couple of years, and he's now the main soccer writer for Chicago Athletic, a new website in the Windy City covering all of their sports. So Evan and I talked about the prospects for both the Reign and the Chicago Red Stars for the 2016 season. Next week's episode will feature a look at the Washington Spirit and the Houston Dash. And then the week leading up to the very first games of the season will feature two episodes to cover the remaining four teams. Note that I won't be doing a preview of the Orlando Pride, but instead we'll give them extra coverage after the club's first few matches. All right, Jen Cooper, the keeper, here with Evan Davis, who has a new title. Instead of, you know, my favorite soccer junkie, we'll say that he's now the main soccer writer for Chicago Athletic, a new website covering Chicago sports. And before we get into the soccer talk, well, specifically the NWSL talk, Evan, tell us a little bit about that website and what you're going to be doing for them.
Yeah, well, as always, wonderful to be on the show. This is a new venture by a couple of guys in San Francisco named Alex Mather and Adam Hansman, who decided that they want to make, in Silicon Valley terms, a disruption in the sports journalism world. So they launched this site, theathletic.com. Currently, we are covering all sports in Chicago with the long-term goal that we're going to spread out across the country. So they brought me on to roll out their coverage for the Chicago Fire and MLS, and keep our fingers crossed. With any luck, I'll be working on the Red Stars as well in the coming weeks. It's a subscription-based site, which basically means that we are able to keep the quality of work very high on a consistent and frequent basis. But we're also able to pay our writers and our editors a living middle-class wage, which is something that does not happen too often in the sports journalism world. So I'm very proud to be working with these guys. I'm very excited to be working with these guys. And I highly encourage everyone to visit theathletic.com. You can get a 30-day free trial, and hope that you consider subscribing as well. They're really great guys to work for, and I think we put out a really great product.
So you're telling me there's not going to be clickbait stories like Carly Lloyd's name on a Starbucks cup or something?
Well,
like that.
It's in my rider. I won't do that. So nip that in the bud right quick.
Nice. Well, we're going to preview, two teams today, part of the whole NWSL preview series that I'm trying to do. And I know you have covered, or at least researched and communicated with Seattle Reign a lot.
Yeah.
And now that, of course, you're going to be the Chicago writer, I wanted to talk about Chicago as well. So let's start with, of course, last year's regular season champions and the runner-up in the NWSL final, Seattle Reign. What are they looking like for 2016?
Well, Laura Harvey is a head coach who knows what she wants. She knows the players that she wants, and those tend to be the people who show up in a roster year in and year out, at least since that second year in 2014. So no matter what goes on in the offseason, no matter what goes on at the draft, her starting 11 is going to be more or less stable. If you want to project out, you know, we're going to see Lauren Barnes. We're going to see Kendall Fletcher. We're going to see Rachel Corsi in the center of defense. Keelan Winters, Jessica Fishlock, and Kim Little is the most consistent and stable midfield in the entire league. Beverly Yanez, who is one of their top goal scorers last year, is going to be starting at the front. So there weren't a lot of needs that she and Bill Predmore felt like they needed to address, two of which were left back with Stephanie Cox retiring, and also another left-sided midfield or forward option. They tend to lean toward going out and getting international signings for people within the starting 11, and they did that again. They signed Antonia Goransson, who they were hoping would fill in at left back and also potentially be a versatile piece anywhere on the left side when Megan Rapinoe left for the Olympics. Now, those plans got disrupted in two major ways, the first of which was when Rapinoe tore her ACL back in December and is most likely not going to be playing. I mean, at the earliest, you would have to think maybe August, which she'll immediately go play with the U.S. women's national team at the Olympics. They're going to be without that spot up top on the left for most of the season. You know, I talked to Harvey and Predmore a couple of months ago about this, and they didn't really feel like that was going to alter their offseason plans all that much, mostly because they had Goransson, who they felt was versatile enough to play anywhere on the left side. So if they needed to kick her higher up the field, they felt like they could do that. Also, Beverly Yanez, who played most of the year either at center forward or out on the right, is such a versatile player and is willing to just kind of do the dirty work and work wherever she needs to for the team. Mm-hmm. She could easily slot in on that left side if she had to and just have Merritt Mathias play more minutes in the middle or have Yanez out on the right and move Goranson up top. But then they signed a Dutch forward named Manon Melis, who played a lot during the World Cup and right. is a very versatile wide threat who plays mostly on the right. So they thought, well, we can have Bev either in the center or we can kick her out left. Rotate Goranson up if we need to, and all will be fine. Then, of course, Antonio Goranson was waived by the team, apparently by mutual consent, for some medical issue that we haven't gotten a whole lot of detail on. So all of a sudden now, we've got that hole on the left side that needs filling. They made kind of an interesting move when they played their first preseason game over the weekend against the Portland Thorns. They stuck Lauren Barnes out at left back, which she's played a little bit of. She was their left back in that first season in 2013. So she has that ability to do that. They have Ellie Reed, who played most of the second half of the year off the bench. You can slot her in at right back, move Kendall Fletcher back into the center back partnership with Corsi. And that has potential promise if they feel like they don't want to go out and get another left back either in a trade or whatever. And then, of course, the other thing that they can do is keep Lauren Barnes in central defense and bring on their first-round draft pick, Carson Pickett, to play that left-sided role. I talked to Laura and Bill about this a little bit more, and they said that this was kind of the first time where they really had actively scouted a player for the draft. They had had their eye on Pickett going as far back as 2014 when she scored the game-winning goal in that NCAA national championship game when she was at Florida State. This is a player that they really like. They feel like she has a lot of ability to get forward and tack, who can probably get trained to be a really solid 1v1 defender. And if she's someone who plays her way into the starting 11, that kind of represents a sea change in how Harvey constructs her roster, because I don't believe that they've ever drafted a player and then immediately put them into that mix.
Right. I can't think of anyone that's had that impact there.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of offseason left to go, especially the predilections that Harvey and Predmore have when they like trading players. So something could happen to cover the Antonio Goranson absence. They do have an international slot left to play with. Nothing's confirmed that yet, but some of the conversations I've had with Harvey and Predmore, it doesn't sound like they are going to chase, you know, a left-sided kind of wing specialist for that spot. But, you know, that was a conversation we had a long time ago. So their plans may have changed now that Goranson won't be around. With that said, this is a very stable roster. And even with bubble players who they like to bring in off the bench or players further down the depth chart where there may be more competitions for spots, they like the players that they've gone with in the past. Havana Salone actually scored a goal in that game against Portland.
Danielle, I wanted to bring up Havana Salone because she was a draft pick, not this year, but last year. You know, mm-hmm. didn't get to play at all last year due to injury. So, you know, they've got to feel really good about her this year. She was in camp, I think, with the U23s and then, you know, looked so calm and composed scoring that goal yesterday in the preseason game. You know, so it's like, hey, here's a new piece to the puzzle.
Exactly. And they have a lot of faith in her and they believe that she's got a high ceiling. So that's a very central bench piece for them. They like Kirsten Dahlstrom is a player who, you know, we saw a little bit of action in the regular season last year. They like Danielle Foxhoven, who they, you know, she left the team by mutual consent to explore their options a couple of months ago, but they brought her right back. And I feel like her coming back to the team last week had a lot to do with the fact that Goranson wasn't going to be around, because they know Foxhoven, they know what she offers, they can trust her, will give them something that they understand. They know what they're getting with her. So you look down that bench and I think you're going to end up seeing a lot of the same faces that we saw in 2015. So this is a pretty rock solid team who, you know, you have to say are probably the preliminary favorites to go all the way, at least get into the playoffs at minimum.
Well, and you and I have talked about this before, how Laura Harvey has built this amazing culture there of, you know, players would kill for the team. You know, as Beverly Goebel said, or Yana said herself at the Niska convention, it's like, I would kill for this team. That's you know, what they built up. And you know, I can totally see the appeal of, you know, Foxhoven coming back. It's like she's a known entity. You know, you look at this roster, you know, like I said, it's like a few changes, but most of these names have been with Seattle, you know, if not four seasons, at least three seasons. I mean, I look at Haley Kottmeyer, and it's like, sure, it's a backup keeper to Hope Solo, but when you know that you're going to lose Hope a lot, to have a backup keeper like that, who you've had almost this whole time, you know, since the league founded, it's like that's a whole level of stability that a lot of clubs don't have.
There's no question. And we saw it last year during the World Cup that they only lost two players. And Haley Kottmeyer, I don't think, is a player that anybody in that organization loses sleep over at all. So losing Hope Solo is, yeah, okay, she's the best keeper in the world, but it's all, in a way, you don't skip a beat by being able to slot Kottmeyer in. And it's the same thing with Pino. It's kind of funny, for a team that scores so many goals as they do, you don't always look to the forward line as the place where, you know, if one of those players goes down, you're in for a lot of hurt. And most of that has to do with the fact that Fishlock and Little can be so proficient in net. So, you know, yes, Pino's injured. Yes, she's a very important player. That being said, Beviana has really broke out last year. She scored 8 goals in 17 appearances. And I think her, you know, non-penalty goals per 90 rate was higher than Kim Little's or Megan Rapinoe's. So you're not really losing a step by shuffling that forward line around. And if you have Yanez try and work it on the left, I think Manon Melis is a more complete player than Katrine Vi was. Vi took a long time to try and adjust to the league and, you know, ultimately made the decision that she wanted to go back to Denmark. Melis is, I think, a much more potent goal-scoring threat. So I think that the fact that Pino won't be around, it won't cause them too much stress. And other than that, they don't really have any other internationals who are going to be missing for the Olympics. So this is a team where, you know, that starting 11 that rolls out that, you know, on opening weekend, barring Hope Solo, that's the starting 11 that we could see in the playoffs, you know, 6 months later.
Yeah, and, you know, again, one of the many facets of Laura Harvey's brilliance that you've got Kim Little from Scotland, Jessica Fishlock from Wales, who, hey, those teams will never be in the Olympics.
But they're, you know, high. They're yeah. They are elite international caliber players.
Right.
So they, you know, they're very fortunate to have those two.
And I think about the 2014 season as well, which was really Seattle's breakout season, that Rapinoe was injured for a lot of that season. So you go back and look at it. She didn't have a lot of minutes, didn't have a lot of impact. We know the player she is, but, you know, they've built this club, you know, where everyone's contributing. You know, I even feel like from the outside that Laura Harvey's built this environment where these players can handle not starting. Not that they don't want to start, but they get that they're like, hey, I'm part of this thing that's bigger than me, and whatever the team needs, I'll do.
Yeah, I think that Ellie Reed is a great example of that. When Corsi was brought in, Harvey all of a sudden had to deal with three center backs, and she didn't initially know how Corsi was going to adapt. And then they played a mid-season friendly against the Chinese national team, who were prepping for the World Cup. And Corsi really stood out to her as someone who probably could slot into the starting 11 quickly. But once you do that, then what do you do about Lauren Barnes, or what do you do about Kendall Fletcher? Well, Lauren Barnes, who I should say, I hope that Carson Pickett is at the top of the left back depth chart, because Barnsley is somebody who has developed into one of the best central defenders in the entire league. And that's not necessarily something you could say about her when the NWSL launched. So I would prefer it, if I were a Seattle Reign fan, to see her maintain that relationship with Corsi in the middle. But with that said, what do you do about right back? Well, Harvey put Kendall Fletcher out there because Fletcher has a lot of versatility as a defender. She's also very good 1v1. She's able to push players, you know, out toward the corner. She can swallow up crossing options. And she's experienced. She's a veteran. And she is, you know, kind of the leader on that back line. So, all right, then you got to push Ellie Reed to the bench after she had kind of established herself as a very legitimate starting right back. Well, I talked to Ellie Reed about this, and she said that exact thing. It's like, I'm here to do what's best for the team. And you saw Ellie Reed tended to be Harvey's first pick off the bench, you know, in the 55th, 60th minute,
right,
when they were potentially ahead and they wanted to look, you know, wanted to shut the game down. Or you could push Reed up into the midfield on the right, and she can help create chances on the wing if they needed to get an equalizer or a winner. She's one of those players who can kind of do it all. She's, you know, the Bev Yanez in further back in the field. So they go into every game and every training session with that mentality. It doesn't stress them out too much. And it allows for Harvey to mix and match based on situations that might arise based on opponents going throughout the season. You know, even though, you know, this is a classic example of a player's form dipping or causing problems in the locker room, that's not something you ever think about with a Laura Harvey team.
Yeah, and we know that this will still be the team, you know, that everyone will be like, oh no, we have to play Seattle.
Yeah, you know, FC Kansas City are defending champions, two-time champions, but we look at how much their roster has rolled over and how much attacking talent they've lost. You know, Vlatko Andonovski and Hugh Williams have built a great program, but are they going to be able to keep it up for a third year in a row? It remains to be seen, whereas the Reign have maintained that consistency. And I don't see anything changing going forward.
Well, so let's move from a team that doesn't have a lot of changes to a team that does. Chicago Red Stars, they made the playoffs for the first time last year. They almost made it in 2014. They lost out to the Spirit on goal differential, I think, or at one of the tiebreakers. You know, and they hadn't made the playoffs in WPS either. So that was a big year for them. Kind of a bust in the actual playoff game, but I know there's you know, other reasons for that. But it was such a great season for them, especially at the beginning last year where, you know, Kristen Press just comes out with a bang. I think it was, what, 5 goals in 3 matches or
something like that,
crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but, okay, we've seen the retirement of Lori Kolupny, Shannon Box, Karina LeBlanc. You've got the big trade bringing Alyssa Nair into the team.
Mm-hmm.
To really strengthen your goalkeeper position. What else do you see happening, you know, for this team, and what other changes you think are going to impact their 2016 season?
Well, I mean, and you talk about players who left. Don't forget, Taryn Hemmings is gone. Abby Ersig is gone.
Right, Taryn taken in the expansion draft. Right,
right. Michelle Lumnicki is gone. Rachel Kwan is gone under somewhat mysterious circumstances. So yeah, and this team has seen a lot of turnover. That said, their core is still kind of in place. You know, Erin Gilliland is coming back. Samantha Johnson, who really kind of stretched her wings out as center back, is coming back. And Rory Dames has already mentioned that she's going to be taking over Abby Ersig's starting position. Vanessa DiBernardo and Daniel Colaprico are coming back. Sofia Huerta is coming back. And also, thanks to, you know, the utter collapse of the Mexican national team, won't be missing for the Olympics. So when Kristen Press goes, they still have an elite goal scorer at the top of the formation. Michelle Dalton is, you know, as good a keeper as anybody in the league. So when Alyssa Nair steps away for the Olympics, they've got no problems in between the sticks. And they've made, I think, some pretty smart acquisitions to fill the gap. They grabbed Brittany Bach off of waivers. Casey Short, who'd been playing in Norway, they signed her last fall, and I think it's anticipated that she'll be the other starting fullback with Gilliland. I don't know if Dames has determined which side either of them is going to start on, but that looks like they'll be your outside backs for the season. One of those trades, they picked up Amanda DaCosta from the Spirit. So you look at, you know, if you look at that projected 11 and that midfield mix of DiBernardo, Colaprico, DaCosta, Alyssa Motz also coming over, Brittany Bach, like, that's a pretty solid group of players, and I think you can mix and match in a lot of different ways in a lot of different formations that doesn't necessarily get hit so hard when considering how the Olympics and player call-ups are going to play out, which we still don't know how much time the U.S. players are going to miss. Sounds like the Australian players aren't really going to miss a lot of time. Brazilian players, Canadian players, it's all a question mark. So when you look at a team like the Portland Thorns, who God knows what their lineup's going to look like mid to late
right.
summer, you know, like, you know, the Red Stars have undergone a lot of changes, but at the same time, there's still a lot of good pieces there. And I think also, like, it's a bad thing that Mexico didn't qualify for the Olympics, given the history of that program. It's a sign that, their program is in a lot of trouble. It's just so important to have a proven goal scorer like Sofia Huerta there for the entire season. We know what she can do. We know that she can score goals. It will take the pressure off the fact that Kristen Press isn't going to be around. And also, you know, they have some depth. Jen Hoy and Zekia Bywaters will be around, and they'll be going around for their second or third years. So this is – I'm not sweating it. I mean, I think the only big question mark is who slots in at center back with Sam Johnson once Julie Johnston leaves to go with the U.S. national team. You would think that probably Katie Naughton is top of the depth chart there.
She was their highest draft pick in January at number 19 overall.
Right, she was 19th overall. She was their top pick. She was a standout at Notre Dame in her college years. She played for the U-20 women's national team in the U-20 World Cup 2 years ago. She played for the U-23s in the Istria Cup not too long ago. So she is someone who clearly has a lot of potential, and I think that Warwick Dames is probably going to keep her as his primary option. He also picked Sarah Gordon third round.
Right.
In the draft, prospect out of DePaul, is a center back. Not as much international experience, but you would have to think that she will at least provide some legitimate competition for Naughton in terms of who will get that first shot playing alongside Sam Johnson come July and August.
And then you had that crazy fourth round at the draft where it was like either Chicago or Washington had like all the picks.
Well,
so
no, the Red
Dames was just like sweeping up picks.
There were 10 picks in the fourth round. Chicago took 5 of them, which is remarkable. And yeah, they were, you know, trading things left and right to try and get into those slots. Two of those players have already been cut from camp, so that kind of narrows the field on where those players are going to slot in. But the players who are still in camp are Courtney Raitzman, Janelle Flaws, and Adrian Jordan. You know, when this airs, preseason rosters for NWSL teams are going to have to be cut to 25. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably see some more non-roster invitees and maybe even a couple more draft picks get cut.
And I should mention, you had mentioned Brittany Bach earlier. She had not reported to camp from what we had heard.
That's right.
It sounds like she's just going to take the season off and see what she wants to do, but obviously when she comes back to the league, Chicago would have her rights. And
exactly.
You know, and that is her home turf.
Yeah, so besides DiBernardo, Colaprico, and DaCosta, there might be a couple of openings in midfield. I think Alyssa Motz will probably fill at least one of those, given her experience. But who knows? They've only played one preseason game. That was a closed-door scrimmage against Illinois State, and we haven't gotten any reports as to how that went. So I can't say for certain what direction Dames is going to go in. But it's so tough, especially with a team Chicago, like Chicago is in, with rosters being so fluid and you only have 20 spots. We haven't gotten a clear answer yet exactly about how amateur reserves are going to be involved this year with the Olympics. So we don't know how many of these players who are in camp currently are going to stick around, and trades come fast and they come furious, and they're always, you know, a lot of them are very unexpected. So, you know, Elise LeHue and Dames probably have a couple of cards up their sleeves. But at the same time, I mean, just looking at the players who we know are probably sure things that they've signed already, like a Casey Short, This is, in the grand scheme of things, one of the more stable teams in the league, especially when you look at the thorns and some of the things that they're going to have to deal with all their international players, or a team like Sky Blue, where, like, who the hell knows what that starting 11 is going to look like after all the players that they've lost. You know, you feel pretty confident that Chicago is going to make another playoff run.
Especially when, you know, it's our fourth season in NWSL, but they had continued after WPS. They had, you know, still existed as a WPSL club.
Yeah.
You know, so they've been doing what they've been doing for a while. Rory obviously is, you know, good at drafting the people, you know, the players from around that area that he knows really well. I mean, I think of that 2015 draft where he picked up, you know, Gilliland, Colaprico, Huerta.
Right.
You know, all of that. It's like so many great players. And we forgot last year that for the most part, they were all rookies. You know, they weren't playing like rookies, especially. I would say Chicago had the best run during that World Cup period where, you know, your World Cup players are gone. They really kind of won that mini season in the middle. So you think of those players coming back. Now they're not rookies. They've got that first season under their belt. I mean, that is your strong core that I think balances out losing a player like Lori Kolupny, who, of course, had been part of the club for a long time, but was gone so much last year that probably didn't get to have the impact that she would have had if she hadn't been back with the national team.
No doubt about it. And I think that, you know, Kolupriko's form, which she played her way into being the NWSL Rookie of the Year, she earned her way into senior national team camps. This is a midfielder that I've been very high on for a while, and I think that she is going to be, you know, pulling a lot of the strings throughout the season. And you can't overlook the value that a player like Amanda Da Costa brings, someone who's been around for a really long time and added a great deal of value to the Spirits playoff season last year. So this is a core that has gotten a ton of experience now under their belts and has proven themselves at the highest level. And you just think that, you know, besides Seattle, besides Portland when they're at full strength, you know, maybe DC. This is very clearly one of the best teams, you know, on paper going forward, especially given how much that they will be able to control once Press, Johnston, and Nair go away for the Olympics.
Well, and I also want to give a shout out to Alyssa Nair. I mean, I think that's a huge trade for the club, and for her to be able to move to a club that has a legitimate, you know, playoff shot, so that maybe we can see what she's like, you know, with a better team. I mean, I don't want to put Boston down too much, but I mean, everyone knows the struggles that Boston's had the last few seasons. So it's like, I think this could really elevate her. And we've already seen her get more minutes this year than Ashlyn Harris from the U.S. national team. So this could be a big move for her.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a great point about Alyssa Nair. Boston's defense has struggled in 2014 and 2015, and can't look at the number of goals that Alyssa Nair let go by and assume that that's a referendum on her talent. I mean, we know the kind of talent that she has. And now that she's, you know, now that she's moved to Chicago, she gets to play in front of Julie Johnston week in and week out. You get to have a fullback like Erin Gilliland, who really proved herself last year, covering out on the right. I think that this only helps her case for being named the backup keeper to Hope Solo come Olympics time. I think Jill Ellis is probably already leaning in that way based on how many minutes and she's earned in the last 12 months as a backup. But I think you're absolutely right. This is going to be a great opportunity for her to really grow as a leader in defense and be able to work with some top talent.
Well, Evan, I'm so excited that you have this gig now that you're going to be covering, you know, Chicago soccer, like on a hardcore professional, legitimate level. You know, to everyone listening, it is a big deal to have a website where the writers are actually paid a living wage, because a lot of what's out there, they aren't. And, you know, of course, I have to admit that's true for keepernotes.com, because I'm not really making any money off that.
Well, that's just it. Yeah. And it's important to note that a lot of sites like Keeper Notes, like others, they put out fantastic work. And it's unfair that we live in a culture where writers like that aren't able to make it their living to do that. So we really hope that TheAthletic.com pushes onward and upward, and that they will add in Red Stars coverage. And we hope that everybody subscribes and enjoys it and supports the stuff that we do.
Well, thanks for your time, Evan, and I look forward to all your great coverage this season.
Thanks, Jen.
All right, time to wrap it up with the back four. The Portland tournament is underway. That's the first NWSL preseason tournament in league history. It kicked off Sunday. The Dash topped Oregon State 3-0 in the first game with two goals from first-round draft pick Jeanine Becky and another from Brazilian Andressa. Then Seattle beat their Northwest rival Portland 2-0 with two second-half goals, one from Havana Salon, the 2015 draftee who didn't play last year due to injury, and the second off a wicked header from Jess Fishlock. You can see the highlights on YouTube and also portlandthorns.com. The tournament continues Wednesday and Saturday, two more doubleheaders. Only the Portland games are being streamed live, so check out portlandthorns.com for more information. Next, keeper jerseys. For those interested in purchasing the new USA goalkeeper jerseys, My Soccer Store can now take orders for the two colors that we know the U.S. keepers will be wearing, the light gray one and the bright blue one. There will likely be a third color, possibly a fourth. We'll just have to wait and see what the U.S. keepers wear in upcoming games. The jerseys are available in men's and women's sizes, and you can add any name and number in the authentic U.S. soccer lettering. And I can do the same thing for NWSL keeper jerseys. So email me at jen@soccerforall.com for pricing details. Next, mark your calendar. We've got two women's national team matches coming up in April against Colombia. You've got the game on Wednesday, April 6th, and then again on Saturday, April 10th. Both games will be televised. Then on April 14th, right before the NWSL season starts, you've got the Olympic draw held in Rio, so then we'll know who's playing whom in the Olympics this summer. And looking way ahead into the fall, sometime in mid-October, the NWSL final. We don't have an exact date, but given that the Dash is currently selling a four-pack that includes, quote, an exclusive game TBA, unquote, it sounds like the 2016 championship match will be played in Houston. Last, but certainly not least, as I've mentioned before, I'm working on an NWSL almanac that will feature team stats, playoffs history, an all-time player registry, photos, and much more. This downloadable PDF will be available for pre-order later this week. Those who pre-order will get a special discount. Final version will be available for download shortly after the 2016 NWSL rosters are finalized, which will be sometime around, I think, April 12th, April 13th. I'm also looking into the option of offering a printed version of the almanac. Any questions? Email me at keeper@keepernotes.com. So that's it for this episode. If you're not already subscribed to the Mix Zone, you can subscribe via iTunes or TuneIn or Stitcher. You can also find the podcast at howlermagazine.com. Thanks to PK Ray for making this podcast possible. And shout out to my buddy Mason for helping me prove a point by exposing his cleavage for my article on keepernotes.com.